Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show, an hour of mind power. I'm Donna Sebo, and I'll tell you what, I'm really excited about our interview today. The reason being is if you've been listening to all of the debates on radio and television, and you listen to so much information that's bandied about, it's easy to become very discouraged, to feel as if everything is going you-know-where in a handbasket. Well, my guest today, Greg Vanurik, is a man. He's in Sweden. We're talking to him in Sweden today. But he's got a phenomenal book called The Triple Crown Leadership. And as those of you who are regular listeners to my show know, to me, it is vitally important that we find out about people who have a passion for making a difference, who go about doing, not just flapping their lips and gums to just chat, but they're really actively involved in making this world a better place. Business is an extremely important cornerstone of this, and there are a lot of good people that have ethics, that have attitudes for making this world a better place. And today we're going to hear about some of that. We're going to find out what Triple Crown Leadership is all about. Greg Vanurik, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Greg, you and Bob Vanurik are two men that absolutely have a love and passion for business. Bob Vanurik, he's the CEO of Sensormatic, a billion-dollar New York Stock Exchange company. He serves as chairman emeritus of the Vail Leadership Institute. He's been associated with many organizations through the years that are global. You have made it a life study, that of leadership, entrepreneurship, personal development. You teach at the Stockholm School of Entrepreneurship and Royal Institute of Technology. You co-founded New Mountain Ventures. You are a senior executive at K-12 Inc. and the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. You are an active writer. My goodness, I'm just so grateful you were able to spend some time with me today. Your schedule is an active one.
It's active. That's because we're so passionate about what we do. It's my father and I who co-wrote this book, Triple Crown Leadership, together, and we believe so strongly, as you do, that there is a better way, that it's so important that we get this right. Leadership is fundamental to so many aspects of our lives, our organizations, our work, our communities, our families, our health, our countries, et cetera. And too many people, we believe, work in organizations that have failed to live up to their values and their aspirations. And too many leaders have gotten caught in the game. And so we believe there's a better way to lead, and that's why we do this.
Now, Stephen Covey and Stephen M. R. Covey wrote a wonderful, wonderful foreword to your book. And the very last paragraph of that foreword, I think, is quite significant. And this is what the Coveys said. We live in a world that is overmanaged and underled. The greatest need in our global society today is for better leadership from all of us. The call has been made. Now it's time for each of us to take the reins. Those words, I feel, are absolutely right on. And I think, in my view, it is so healthy that so much of what I would consider the darker underbelly of the negative side of business attitudes and ethics has been coming out. I don't care whether it's government or anything else. I am so glad that so much is being brought out? Is it aggravating and agitating? Oh, it's infuriating. It's really infuriating to the average individual. It really angers me when people think that the average individual in any, whatever average is, in this world doesn't have the capacity to think through and be aware of things that are going on. They are. And so I really think it's healthy, and I think your book, and I said this to you before we went on the air, I think the timing of your book, Triple Crown Leadership, is marvelous, because we need to let everyone know that things can change. It is important. Each of us bears a level of responsibility in our own environments to do this. And I love how in your book, because I'm a fan of horses, I love how the story of Meadow Farm and Secretariat, one of the most phenomenal racing horses in racing history, was right at the beginning of your book. Why is it you used the racing industry instead of one other industry to balance out the book?
Well, we think of this leadership business that we're talking about as a quest for a better way to lead. And in our research, our interviews with 61 leaders of organizations in 11 countries, in our own experiences, which you referenced earlier, we found people and came up with an idea that there are three essentials for this better brand of leadership, and they're the three E's. Number one is excellence. They achieve exceptional results and impact. Number two, they operate ethically. They do the right thing even when it's costly and hard. And number three, they are enduring. They stand the test of time and operate sustainably. So they're excellent, ethical, and enduring. And so we said there are three E's there. What's a metaphor that we can use to talk about that? And we were talking to our colleague, Craig Wiley, and he said the triple crown of thoroughbred horse racing, this great, great quest for greatness in that field. And the more we looked into it, and of course we were familiar with the Seabiscuit stories and Secretariat and Man of War, some of the great horse racing legends, the more we looked into it, the better it felt. And what's really interesting is that since 1875, only 11 thoroughbreds have won the Triple Crown. And by that, they have to win the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes all in the same year. Different states, different distances, all within a span of about 5 weeks. So it's incredibly rare, but it's possible. And that's the kind of leadership quest that we're talking about in this book.
I'm going to quote from your book a couple of statements. It takes proactive leadership to instill and enforce ethical behavior in an organization. I think I'd use the words, what goes on at the top permeates the organization all the way to the bottom. And most ethical letdowns occur because there's pain or discomfort involved with ethical behavior. And I really like the values that you state: excellence, innovation, engagement, integrity, and inclusiveness. These are powerful words. And I think it's so disheartening to so many people who really believe in this, and those that are supposed to be leaders are allowed to disengage from that, and they're not held accountable for that disengagement. And the person out on the street said, wait a minute, I might be put in jail for this, or I would be drummed out of business if I did this. Again, your book goes a long way to saying, let's wake up and realize that this is something that can be demonstrated, this is something that can be done, and we can demand it from the people around us, regardless of the positioning that we are in. This is something that you think was standard. In your research, I know you've got such wonderful examples in your book, but in your research, what was the negative side of the coin that when you were doing this just reinforced the necessity of this book?
Well, you look around. I mean, everywhere you look these days, it seems like there's a scandal of the week. in the different, not only in business. I mean, of course, you see all of these, you know, business scandals in Wall Street, but it's also K Street and the lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and you're seeing it even now with the doping scandal and cycling and how sad, and Penn State University and even the Boy Scouts and just awful things have happened there that are failures of leadership and ethics. And so, you know, and this is something that's just been recurring, unfortunately. I mean, we're coming at trying to claw our way out of this global financial crisis and some of the excesses on Wall Street and with the lenders, subprime mortgage providers. But there was also a stock options backdating scandal 5 years ago. And 5 years before that, it was Enron and Arthur Andersen and Global Crossing. And before that, you had the savings and loan crisis and you had the junk bond. And so, you know, this, at some point, this is going to become our legacy to future generations. And so, you know, we've got to stop. And leaders have, an utmost, foremost responsibility to not only achieve the results that we all want from our organizations. We all want to be high performing. We all want to do our best. And it's a competitive world, and fair is fair. But we also need to achieve those results ethically. We need to pay attention to how we're going about our business. And we also need to think about the time horizon. And a lot of the problems today, the ethical problems, come from taking such a short-term time horizon and looking things, you know, the Wall Street's expectations for your quarterly numbers and all the pressures there, and not taking the longer view, playing the long game, as we talk about in the book. And it's very difficult to resist those pressures and those temptations. But that's what is at the core of good leadership.
The great law of the Iroquois Confederacy, I was surprised to see this in the book. Their attitude was, and this goes back many, many generations, in our every deliberation, we must consider the impact of our decisions on the next seven generations. Now, those are powerful words. We must consider the impact of our decisions on the next seven generations. I think that with any company, it is always a challenge when you have had good leadership and that leadership is going to be transferred. How do you choose that group of individuals? How do you make an evaluation about those persons that you're going to be bringing onto the team? And that is a segment that you cover in your book. And I'd like you to address that, because whether you're a small business, medium size, or big business, the people you have around you, the teams that you form, are vital. And of course, things change. And if you're looking at the long term and you're wanting to prepare for those people that can carry the baton, so to speak, what do you recommend?
Well, thank you for starting with the Iroquois seven generation, which is just so powerful. And just today, it's so easy to fall into the instantaneous, the kind of the Facebook timescale, the tweeting, you know, 7 seconds, not seven generations, you know, 7 days, 7 weeks, as opposed to really looking to the future. And so when you look at this question of bringing in new people, I think so many people get it wrong. And this is just a very, very common trap. And I think everybody is looking just at the head when they're looking to recruit new leaders or new talent into the organization. They're looking at the resume, they're doing the interview, and they're looking at the classic things like knowledge, skills, education, credentials. Okay. Now, don't get us wrong. We're not saying that those are not important. Of course, they're important. But to focus only on those things is a huge mistake, and it's one of the things that leads us into these ethical problems. When we say those are head issues, all those knowledge and skills, you also have to look at the heart. Okay. You have to look at the heart of people that you are considering bringing into your organization, whether you're recruiting or interviewing. By that, we mean a few things. Okay. Number one, their character, their integrity. You want to ask them about their personal values, about their story of mistakes they've made and what they've learned from it, what they're trying to do in the world, service, family, community, number one. You also want to look at their emotional intelligence. Do they have an ability to understand their own emotional responses to stressful situations, to pressure, to manage that, to find a renewal in their lives and see it in other people and be able to work effectively with people of different personalities and strengths and passions? And then finally, number three of this heart aspect you want to look at is fit with the culture of the organization. Okay, you want to say, well, these may be good people, but do they really buy into who we are and what we're all about here and how we do things in our organization? Or would they be better served working somewhere else because they're not a good fit? And we talk to, you know, executives, different places that really place a premium on these things. Zappos.com is an example where they have committees interview people, not just one person, but they'll have teams of people interviewing people. They'll look not only for their credentials, but they'll also look for their values and their fit with the culture. At Xerox, Ursula Burns, we talked to the CEO, it's the same thing. And even in terms of performance reviews, you don't look at just their performance, you look at how well they upheld the shared values of the enterprise. How well did they contribute to the culture of the organization as well? And that becomes, for example, some places up to 50% of their performance review has to do with values and culture and not just the short-term performance.
I found it fascinating in your book, and you titled this section Alignment Pivots. You said many entrepreneurs today don't even develop business plans. They often are just winging it by the seat of their pants. And I know that anybody that has ever been in business for a long term, and if they have done well, even if they failed, they shudder just at the thought of that. They'll say, oh, that's not the right thing to do. How has the business environment shifted because of technologies that we have today? I mean, I'm just amazed at how sometimes shifts happen so quickly. And how do you evaluate this? I mean, when I saw this statement, I went, wow, and you call it cognitively ambidextrous. Let's go into that for a bit.
Right. Well, this is in the startups chapter. And so what we've done is we've laid out a general case for leadership that applies to all organizations. And we've got five practices, leadership practices, for how to build an excellent, ethical, and enduring organization, one of which is that head and heart we just talked about. And then we have chapters in part two of the book that are designed for specific cases. And so startups are a specific case. And indeed, you know, I'm teaching entrepreneurship in Stockholm. I'm working with people around the world on their business plans. And a lot of people today, it's becoming a little bit passé in some circles to even write a business plan when you're launching a new venture. And what people are focusing on instead often is a business model, which is, you know, how you can create, deliver, and capture value in the marketplace. And that's, the technology is changing. There's so many new tools with social media and technological acceleration that it speeds things up dramatically. And so part of the concern is if you take the time to do a business plan, it might be obsolete by the time that you're done, or things are always different than what you expect. Okay, and so this point about cognitively ambidextrous, it comes from Babson College, which is one of the leading colleges in the world for entrepreneurship. And they say you need to be able to shift between two things. One is prediction logic, which is acting based on analysis and trends, which you would do in a typical business plan when you're getting market research and data and you're forecasting, et cetera. And number two is you also need to be able to, especially in a startup or a rapidly changing industry, be able to do what's called creation logic, which is devising options in the face of uncertainty. And of course, that's what's unique about startups is we call it RUT, R-U-T, extreme resource constraints, uncertainty, and time pressure. And that's what's unique about their situation. And so according to Babson, you need to be able to do both. You need to be able to do the business planning and the crunching of numbers, but you also need to be able to act and create new options when you don't know what's going to happen because nobody's done this before. And that's becoming the case for even a lot of non-startups as they're trying to innovate and keep up with the rate of technological change that we're seeing with all the new technologies.
Right. And another aspect, and I know I'm bouncing around in your book, but it's in the same section, I was really appreciative of what you said about boards. Now, there has been a great deal of scandal regarding different companies' unethical practices, and the boards were directly involved in this. All they were interested in was what the amount of money they were going to be getting out of this. This has come to the forefront, and I really, really appreciated the one company that said, got news for you. You're on the board. You only have a year. And they're evaluated every single year. The board is evaluated. They're held accountable. The idea of the good old boys or good old gals just sitting there and getting to be like fat cats, they have to be held to performance too. And I think these different aspects of business, growing a business, being involved with it, I think are so well presented in your material that any person, I don't care what level they're at, could benefit from reading your book. And again, the analogies with racing. And I love the story about Seabiscuit, because that was just an incredible horse. This was a horse that nobody thought could go anywhere, and yet there was a team that was brought together around this animal. Share this story, because it is just such a powerful story. It's such a wonderful example of when you have the good team, how it works.
Right. Well, Seabiscuit, you know, this is going back to the earlier portion of the 20th century, and you're in the Great Depression era, and you've got these competing horses on different coasts. And so on the East Coast, you've got this prestigious, well-bred horse that's owned by rich, wealthy industrialists who have been very successful with their racing program. And the War Admiral is a descendant of Man of War, which is one of the unbelievable horses in racing and whatnot, and just winning all the time on the East Coast in the prestigious races. And then on the West Coast, you've got Seabiscuit, who is not bred by any special mean doll, was unknown, was a little chubby and short and odd-looking, and was named after a cracker that sailors used to eat, and lost most of his first races. But there was a trainer who was a frontiersman and who was really, some said, a horse whisperer. Named Tom Smith, who saw something special in Seabiscuit's eyes and in his manner, which is that when you really engage him in a battle, in a fight, or some kind of competitive thing, he really came alive. He had this fire in him. He had real heart. And he saw that, and he said, get me that horse. I can work with him. You just got to trust me on this. And everybody thought that was crazy. And sure enough, he worked with him in his strange ways that nobody else knew or understood. And Seabiscuit stood winning. And you had this thing on the East Coast, War Admiral was dominant. And on the West Coast, Seabiscuit was coming up. And everybody, after a while, started saying, match race. Let's not just run them in a race together with 12 other horses. Let's run them one-on-one. And let's see who the best horse in the country is. And they tried to put it to, there was a clamor for this, and they tried to put it together over and over, and they couldn't, and it just wouldn't work, and it seemed like fate was against them. And finally they put them together in a match race, and they were able to run together, and sure enough, Seabiscuit dug it out unbelievably, and just showed this incredible heart, even though he was just a standard old horse, nothing special. And he was kind of a horse of the people that was a symbol of hope in a time of darkness in the world.
It's just an incredible story. Of course, a movie has been made about Seabiscuit, which just by the time you finish watching it, you're standing and cheering. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful. And all of those stories, wherever, and you've got so many good ones in your book. But I want to bring up a company that I have a great deal of respect for. It's Medtronic. And you talk about Medtronic that the CEO, Bill George, found out about illegal behavior by the company's independent distributors in four countries, and he was going to fire them. That's it. And he said, we have to start over. We don't tolerate jerks. And in so many environments, people that don't have integrity, people, I don't care what level in the company they are, it's tolerated, it's looked over. We all know of someone that says, nobody will care. We just do this. I remember once working for a company where individuals were come in, they were robbing from their employer and selling products from the employer on the side. And everybody that was buying it knew about this. And I can remember actually getting in touch with the company saying, do you know what's going on here? And someone called me crazy. They said, you realize they could kill you for this. You might be found dead on the street somewhere. And I thought at the time, this is not right. Their own employees are robbing them. This happened to Medtronic. And he said no when he found out about it. He said no. Now, this is important. People are often called whistleblowers, and they've been criminalized often by different people in a horrible way. This is something you address in your book, and I think it's important. I think it's so important. What would you say to this?
Well, in the Medtronic case, it's interesting because those were independent distributors around the world. And the fact that they were independent distributors of the company, they didn't technically report to Bill George, the CEO of Medtronic. That was used as a shield for unethical behavior, which a lot of people knew about. And just they were doing a good job in terms of their financial performance and delivering results, so people just looked the other way. And when Bill George found out about it, he said, no way. I love that line that you quoted. We don't tolerate jerks. We'll start over. I don't care about how good your performance is. We can find other people who can also do a good job, but even more important than that is character and integrity and living up to our values. And I think that kind of ethical leadership is actually pretty hard. I mean, I think a lot of people, one of the problems here, in our opinion, is that people take it a little bit for granted, and they say, oh yeah, we've got this ethics stuff. You know, I'm a good person. I'm honest. And we don't realize that actually the situations we're placed in today's world can be very, very difficult. And you know, some researchers actually say that our brains are wired to rationalize behavior that protects us from pain or conflict or separation from the group. So Here you are in a situation where in the company everybody's saying, oh, no, you don't want to make waves. You know, we need to make our numbers. Let's not rock the boat. You don't want to be one of those goody-goody people who's going to just cause trouble. Come on, don't create problems for us. You say, no, I don't care what the consequences are. That's just not right. And of course you need the CEO to do that, but you also need that kind of ethical leadership from the board, as you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. You need it from the senior management team, and you need it throughout the organization for people, even without authority or any kind of status, to be stewards of the culture of character, as we talk about, and this kind of excellent ethical and enduring leadership to say, you know what, I'm going to protect the leadership dynamic in our culture, and I'm going to be a whistleblower, or I'm going to speak up, even though it's hard and I feel nervous about it or a little bit fearful about it.
Mm-hmm. I think that is so important. And again, your book, Triple Crown Leadership, goes a long way to that. And quickly, I want to mention a company, Emphasis, that is strategically placed in India. And I have a number of East Indian friends, and they go to and from India, and they say the corruption is unparalleled. It's just horrible. And yet this company absolutely refused to go along with it. And I am just so impressed with this because of the status of this organization. And they've had to go to court to stand true to what they are. And little by little, they have been making inroads into breaking down this status quo, that everybody does this. I mean, it's so significant. It really is important. And your book just is outstanding. Now, I want to ask you a question. I know that you have your entrepreneur school overseas, and the Stockholm School of Entrepreneurship. Is there an equivalent here in the United States?
There are great entrepreneurship programs in different parts of the country. I referenced Babson College earlier, doing some great things. Actually, Harvard and MIT on the East Coast are doing some terrific things. Stanford in Denver, where I used to live, there's some great entrepreneurship programs. And so, and the good ones, I think, teach ethics as well as all the ins and outs of launching a startup venture. And so, yeah, more and more there are incubators and startup accelerators in Seattle and Washington, D.C., all over the country, different parts of California. And so we're excited to see that. And we believe that more of these programs need to inculcate the ethical perspective and the enduring / sustainability perspective, as well as the results and the excellence.
I agree. And I think it needs to spread out into the political environment, medical environment, all levels. And we need to expect it. We need to demand it. Well, Greg Vanderek, I'm just absolutely thrilled that you were able to take time out of your very, very busy schedule to be with me today. This book to me is just so, so valuable. TripleCrownLeadership.com. For those of you listening, if you have young people that are interested in business, if you're wanting to develop business, why not add this to your library? Take time to read. It is something that so many times people say, oh, we don't have the time to sit down with a good book. Let me tell you something. Put yourself into a spot where there's no noise. Go to your local library, wherever it is, the corner of your home. Get out a yellow highlighter. And I want you to read this book, because it is something that sets a standard that if you have children, it can be a very good example. If you're wanting to do a business on your own, it'll give you some very good, solid basis of information to research and investigate, so that you can realize that you can make a difference by being the best you can be, but also understanding how you can enforce the level of ethics, integrity, and excellence that means so much to all of us. Greg Vanderek, thank you very much for being my guest today, and I wish you nothing but success. This book is just worth its weight in gold and then some.
Well, thank you for having me. And everybody, leadership is a choice, not a title. And everybody can lead from where they are. It's been a real pleasure to be with you. So thank you.
You're very welcome, Greg Vanderek. And last name is spelled V-A-N-O-U-R-E-K. His first name is G-R-E-G-G. Check out TripleCrownLeadership.com. Donna Siebel here. We're coming back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Siebel is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Business is that which enables the rest of us to do so many various areas of interest being involved. And I think that when you can understand certain components, it enriches your life. And I feel like we all are in business, every single one of us. Now, you may say, no, I'm just a mom. But remember, if you're a mom and you're taking care of a household, you're a business person. Why? You have to manage the budget. You have to take care of your family. You are looking at what needs to be paid for, what does not. You're often involved with finances and making decisions about loans, etc. That's being in business. Life is business. So when you can get good, solid training and understanding, you're going to come out a lot better. And nobody ever says it's an easy road. It isn't. It's hard work. It always is hard work. I haven't found a utopia yet. Have you? I don't think so. It's always that fantasy of existence. But life demands participation. So when you have this level of understanding and education, and when you can expand your own paradigms of understanding, that empowers you in new and different ways. And I can remember a minister many, many years ago saying to me, I was in a class that he was presenting. He said, we always must continue to educate ourselves. You must be willing to read and to learn, because otherwise, you're not going to be able to give the best of what you are capable of doing unless you have that kind of a demeanor. How many times have you encountered someone whose mentality and whose world is about the size of a postage stamp? We need to expand ourselves. Reading gives us that opportunity. And there is something magical about holding a book in your hand. And I know a lot of people are enamored of Kindles and other things, and I think they serve a purpose. I think it's wonderful. However, I can tell you that when I review materials with the guests that we have here on the Donna Sebo Show, and I actually read their materials, I've got a yellow highlighter in hand, and I am underscoring or marking the sections that I feel give information that we can utilize to make a good interview. And I think that that's important, and people need to understand that, and I say this to you because I know you're interested because you enjoy the show. And I like your feedback. You send me all kinds of things on videos and different pieces of material, individuals you think that would make good guests. And I so appreciate this. We live in a wonderful world, but only when we're open to learning, only when we're open to expanding our world and exploring, are we going to find how rich it really is? Too many people get locked into their postage stamp mentality because they're scared. They're afraid if they step out of their space, they're going to lose their security. Don't ever be that way. Be willing to explore. I was watching a documentary on television just the other night about Siberian tigers. And I didn't get to see the whole program. I was busy working. And as it turned out, I happened to come down into the family room. The television was on, and here is this phenomenal program on Siberian tigers. And there was this one gentleman, the portion that I saw, this gentleman had given up his personal life to do research on Siberian tigers. And, of course, so many of them have been slaughtered by poachers. We have a very small amount. But he tracked them. And one of the things that he learned in this experience, he got in touch with nature. He found that actually the tigers became aware of him. They knew about him far sooner than he knew about where they were. And they just seemed to understand that he wasn't there to harm them. And he saw things about tigers that disproves theories that have been around for hundreds of years. One, they're very social creatures. Two, they're very adaptable. And three, they have a love of family. Who knew? We always thought they were these magnificent creatures. And then to find out how intelligent that they are and how their adaptability and that there are maybe more than we realize, but they've gone into places that allow them to hide from man. And the program was just absolutely phenomenal, absolutely incredible. But this is due to one man. I don't know if it was 3 years or 4 years, all by himself. No human contact, rarely. It was all about the passion he had for learning about the tiger and how to save it so that it would not be eliminated from the face of the earth. One man spurring someone else who was also involved in this documentary. It is just absolutely fascinating how one person can make a difference. But it's the dedication, the commitment, the integrity, their personal ethics, and their willingness to go the extra mile. It's an incredible thing. Absolutely incredible. Oh, by the way, phone line is open, 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, just know, I just want your first name or initial. Give me a call, and I'll light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Oh, before I forget, I am going to be in Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska next week, if you're listening from that part of the world. I'm looking forward to it, and just know that you'll be able to meet with me in person, and if you'd like to do that in either one of those locations, either by phone or again, in person, call me at my office, 253-582-5604, and we can set up a time to meet. And then also, on November the 3rd, I'm going to be presenting the last class of the year, Quantum Mind 4, along with Robert Newman. Now, Robert Newman is very knowledgeable about feng shui, but also Chinese herbal medicine. And in the Asian world, the understanding about wellness and longevity, well, we're finding more and more about it, and this has been a passion of Robert's for almost all of his life. So he's going to be sharing that portion of information, the secrets of longevity, in the first part of the class. In the second part of the class, we are going to be helping you to see your own intuitive capacities. And all of us have it. All of us have it, but it demonstrates itself in different ways. So on November 3rd, which is a Saturday, in Western Washington, and the place is the Bridgeport Place, where we're going to have our class. We've had it there before. And it's limited to 25 students. If you would like to be one of those 25 students, give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. This is a seminar for the day. Starts at 10 in the morning, will end between 4 and 5 o'clock, and we do serve you lunch. So it's a beautiful environment. It's a very interactive class for both you, the participant, and for Robert and myself, and we really enjoyed it. So we're looking forward to having you participate. And again, give me a call, 253-582-5604. Put it down on your calendar for November 3rd. Pets that make a difference. You all know that I have a real soft spot in my heart for animals. But I came across this one story about a three-year-old, and I'm telling you, it really touched my heart. So I'm going to be sharing that with you, and I think you will find it just as enjoyable. I do want to let you know, we have had some changes. Some of my guests that were listed on the BBS site, there have been shift and changes, and that's what happened today. We were not able, the doctor that we were going to have on talking about magnesium, that didn't work, and then Greg Benorek came in place, but she's going to be coming on next month. So just know that we're still going to have Dr. Dean. But coming up this next week, how do you prepare yourself for circumstances that you're not expecting? Well, John Arnold, we're going to be talking about the fallback positioning, and then Ryan Clark. Are you, as a family, trying to figure out how you're going to send your kids to college? How do you manage this? In today's world, I was just talking with someone in my local post office. She has a 16-year-old daughter who is a sophomore in high school. She's an honor student. She wants to go to college, and the family doesn't have very much money. Well, I'll tell you what. We were able to share some information with this mother that she didn't have a clue about. So this is going to be Ryan Clark, and then I'll be up in Alaska, but I'm still going to be broadcasting. We're going to be talking also about eco-literate. Now, what does this mean? It means that there are some significant people that are really moving into the forefront saying, let's teach how we can make our environment healthier. We're all realizing that if we poison our environment, we poison ourselves and the life that supports us on so many levels all around us. Well, we're going to go into some specifics with that. And last summer with Oscar next week, well, we're going to be talking with Ms. Schwartz, a woman that shares a story about her fabulous dog that you're dearly going to love. And then, well, we've got stuff about ghosts and all kinds of things. So do check out the listing of upcoming guests. Know that there have been a couple of changes, but that's all right. We always have dynamic, interesting people here on the Donna Sebo Show, and I just delight in reviewing their material and in hearing their stories, but it can, because it makes me, I think, expand in my thinking, and I like to think it helps you expand in yours. Donna Sebo here. Let's take a break for just a moment. 888-627-6008 if you'd like to chat. Give me a buzz. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Yesterday, when I was out walking my little Scottish Terrier, Victor, we encountered a group of children. The ages were from 6 months to 3 years of age. And when you're not around children a great deal, you forget how precocious and how extremely bright three-year-olds are. Well, we had an engaging conversation with these three-year-olds and then went on our way. And synchronistically, this article came across my desk. And I thought, boy, I can really relate to this after encountering these children. And I thought this little girl, this three-year-old little girl, whose name is Alida, she is quite a kid. I think her family is amazing, but I think the story about her and her golden doodle dog. That's right. That's what he is. He's a golden doodle. He's just a composite, a lab and a poodle, I guess, is the combination. His name is Mr. Gibbs. Now, if you've ever been around three-year-olds, you know how hyper they are. They are just going, going, going. They're going to beat the Energizer Bunny anytime. Well, this little girl, Alida and Mr. Gibbs, you can't separate them. They are just bonded tremendously, not only by a bond of love, but also because of this little girl's disease. She has a rare lung disease. She must have oxygen. She can't breathe on her own for longer than 45 minutes. Now, there's a 2-foot tube that delivers oxygen from tanks that she's hooked up to all the time. Now, these tanks are carried on the dog's back. The disease is the neuroendocrine cell hyperplasia of infancy. It has an abbreviation of NEHI. This is rare, but Mr. Gibbs all the time, everywhere she is carrying 10 pounds of equipment so that this child can live, including an oxygen tank in a vest. Now, she's 3 years old. And again, children of that age are always on the go. How in the world did this come about? It was a team effort. Alita, Mr. Gibbs, the parents, Aaron and Debbie, worked with a dog trainer, Ashley Kinsley, and it helped to develop this very special relationship between the dog and this little girl. And he was trained. His job is to do whatever she does. Now, guess what the dog has to do? Now, this is not going to come as a surprise. He has to trot alongside Alita when she's biking. He's right there with her. He's her shadow everywhere she goes. When she's outside playing, he's there. When she's in her high chair eating, he's there. Now, they're hoping by the time that Alita goes into kindergarten that they will be able to make arrangements for the dog to go with her. And children sometimes outgrow this condition, but they're concerned that she may need this ongoing. And they said, we just don't know how we could, our child wouldn't have made it without this dog. She would have been literally in a prison. She would never have been able to do very much, go very far. And with Mr. Gibbs, Alita is able to live a life that is as close to normal at this point that she possibly can have. Their bond is so great that if this dog is separated from this child, he becomes frantic. They have become like one soul. It's just an incredible story, and I wanted to share that story with you today. Donna Sebo, give me a buzz if you would like to chat. The telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. Well, here in the Pacific Northwest, it's getting cooler and cooler. And, of course, we love it. But I thought I would share with you something that I'm sure will tickle your taste buds. And if you're like so many people, when the weather is getting colder and maybe you're out like me, you're walking your dog or you're running, and when you come home, you want something that's going to take the chill out of you. Well, how about some spiked hot apple cider? Oh, it smells so good when you're fixing it. But what you can do, and you don't need to have it spiked. This is obviously for adults, but you can fix it with just a little bit of an addition for children, and I'll give that to you also. But this is what you need to have. This, I thought, was really cool, especially in the fall. I just think it's delightful. You can have some, about a quarter teaspoon of red, orange, and yellow decorating sugars and a tablespoon of light corn syrup. If you don't want the corn syrup, you could use maple syrup. I love the flavor of maple. You need a pear, cored cut into quarters, 12 cloves, 5 cinnamon sticks, a quart of apple cider, and you can make your own if you want, but it's cheaper to go to the store. A quart of apple cider, 8 tablespoons of apple rum, and there is actual apple rum. Bacardi puts out a big apple rum, and 4 tablespoons of dark rum. Now, again, this is for adults, obviously. Now, in a shallow bowl, you put your decorated sugars, you pour the maple syrup or corn syrup onto a small shallow plate, and you dip rims of 4 Irish coffee glasses or 4 other 8-ounce mugs or heat-proof glasses into the syrup mixture, then into the sugars, and you put it to the side. I just had a thought. Maybe if you took some, a little bit of apple juice, but if you have the thick syrup, that works better. But you could use maybe just, you know how to use the lemon lime? Of course, you don't want to use lemon or lime, but a juice of an apple, just rub it around. Maybe it would hold it. Who knows? Just a thought. Then you want to evenly divide your stud pear, your pear quarters, and the cloves you're supposed to put in to the pear quarters. You put them in a large pot, the pears with the cloves, you add your cider and one stick of cinnamon, bring it to boil over medium-high heat, and then you turn it down to medium-low. You simmer for about 5 minutes. All of the flavors from the pears, the cloves, the cinnamon, and the apple cider are going to blend. They'll marry together. And then you want to take two tablespoons of apple rum and 1 tablespoon of dark rum, and pour that amount into each of your glasses. Divide your pear quarters among the glasses. Get rid of the cinnamon stick from the hot cider, and then put the hot cider inside the glasses. And you can use cinnamon sticks as stirrers. Mmm, smells great. Now, the kid version is forget the rum and add 3/4 cup of additional apple cider. Oh, it's so good, and the smell is incredible. Really good stuff, and it's perfect for warming up after that cold run. Well, we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Have an absolutely awesome weekend wherever you are. I'll be coming up to Alaska next week. Looking forward to it. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy this wonderful day. Count your blessings, and don't forget to smile. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.